Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of The Armchair Survivalist. I'm Kurt Wilson, The Armchair Survivalist. Welcome to the show. If you go to armchairsurvivalist.com and you scroll down, any of the pages, just scroll down, you'll see ways to listen. And I got all these podcast venues, iHeartRadio, Podbean, TuneIn, Anchor, Stitcher. There's so many of them, I'm not going to name them all. And I'm even on YouTube. Now, the YouTube is usually not up until Tuesday or Wednesday, but everything else is usually live and ready to go by Sunday. You can listen on Global Star 3 Satellite. You can listen in my chat room. Chat room's there for people who just want to automatically listen, or if you want to ask some questions, make some comments, you can do that too. Or you can listen on your phone. Now, it's not toll-free. It's area code 641-741-0371. So this is your dime, if there is a dime. Most people nowadays are smart enough to have an unlimited cell phone plan. But it's area code 641-741-0371. And there's, at the top of the page, if you miss the show, there is a link up there. It says, listen 24 hours a day to the recent show of The Armchair Survivalist. Click here. Do that, and you'll hear it. Usually. Sometimes I'm a one-man band here, so I do all the research. I do all the producing. But thanks to Todd, my engineer. He's the one that puts my show out all over the place. But sometimes I forget to do something. You know, don't rag on me too much. If you want to listen to any of the earlier shows of the current year, you go to the Little White Nipper Dog listening to the RCA Victor gramophone. You click on that, and that'll take you to a page that says The Armchair Survivalist Past Shows, and it'll list all of the shows for this past year. And you can download them there, or you can play them there, as you wish, whichever, okay? Anyway, not much news for Survival Enterprises, my company, except we have a couple products back in stock. The mini Sawyers, these are little pockets, water filtering systems that you can carry around with you. They're reusable. They'll last the rest of your life. I mean, these things, they claim they'll do 100,000 gallons, but I've never had one wear out because they're back flushable. So you use them for a while and just flush them out with the equipment that comes with it. Our oregano oil is back in stock for now. It's getting hard to get because it comes out of Turkey. Turkey's not doing a lot of exporting right now. And it's also looking like Turkey and a few other the psychotic Muslim nations are about to go to war again. Anyway, so just to let you guys know, that stuff's ready to go. So let's get into the economy. Now, this is bad news for all of you couch jockeys out there. The Big Ten nicks is fall college football season. So that's it for them. And the Pac-12 are canceling the football season as well. So I saw a baseball game last night. It was one of the stupidest things I ever saw. It was almost like watching baseball on Xbox, except on Xbox you actually have a crowd. I'm looking at these guys knocking a ball around, and I look out, and there's nobody in the audience. There's nobody up there. Nobody. Nobody up there at all. Except one guy. One guy was, he's a pitcher, and he'd hurt himself, so he was out of the game for now. And this idiot was sitting up there, and he was the one doing all the yelling at the refs. Well, the problem when you don't have a crowd is you're the only crowd there is, so everybody hears you perfectly. He ended up getting thrown out of the game. He got thrown out of the crowd, which didn't exist. So the NFL is doing the same thing. I mean, all the football, college football, they're closing down, okay? The NFL is no longer going to have the performed national anthem, you know, where somebody gets up on the field and sings the national anthem because, you know, even though they're 100 feet away from anybody, they're liable to die of COVID. So they decided they're not going to have anybody doing that, and there's not going to be any halftime shows either. So you'll just get to watch a whole bunch of racists run around and beat each other up, because that's pretty much what it is. You got 90% of all NFL football players are black. 90% of them are racist and hate America. And that's why the NFL, I don't think it's going to last the season. Because, first off, they're not selling tickets. Second off, nobody's going to watch pay-per-view because all they're going to see is a bunch of black guys kneeling and some white virtue signalers kneeling as well. This whole thing is they need to all just be eradicated. You want to watch football? Go on YouTube and watch some show from the 60s or something like that. 83, now you understand we're under the economy, right? I have different categories. 83% of New York City restaurants have not been able to pay July rent. Why? Because they're not open. Because the communists in charge of New York City decided to shut down everything. And so they can't make any money. So they can't pay rent. I'm looking at all of the economic moderation that's occurring right now. And the people who are, they are monitoring what's happening nationwide. I get listings from all these different restaurants that are for sale. It's just one of the little things I do for data. And I'm seeing there's 175,000 restaurants for sale in the United States. 175,000. They're closed or almost closed. In cities where, well, like here in Coeur d'Alene, we got this closet commie mayor, governor. The mayor is a commie, but the governor is supposed to be a Republican. He's not. He's just a good old boy that blows any which way he's ordered to. And he ordered all the stores, everything, restaurants to close down. The majority of them did. I got a friend of mine who said, go to hell. And he stayed open. And nobody came by to harass him. So he just stayed open. So, but regardless, then they said, okay, you can open, but you can only have 50% people in there. And everybody has to wear a mask. Oh, wait, can't wear a mask if you're eating. Okay, you can lower your mask while you're putting a fork of food in your face. So this kind of crap. These restaurants realize they're getting destroyed, and a lot of them want to bail while they can. See, right now, they might have some value to them. But when this lockdown becomes permanent or goes back into a second wave of lockdowns, they're toast and they're not going to be worth anything. Literally. And that's the thing. With this pandemic, it's the whole intent is the destruction of the economy of the United States. And we'll get into that later. There's a little report out. Let's see. Retail chains are abandoning Manhattan. Not just Manhattan, but all of New York. The big retail chains. Oh, Macy's. There's dozens of them. And I mean dozens of them. These are the big ones. These are the ones that have 10,000 plus square feet. Or even more than that. Well, there's nobody there. Especially the big retail restaurants. Like Denny's. People aren't traveling. Yeah, Denny's is always right on the freeway. Right off the freeway. Wherever it is in whatever city in the United States. Well, people aren't really traveling that much now. And businesses are shut down in the large cities. Plus, Denny's is a favorite target for the gutter trash that likes to loot. So they're closing down. U.S. bankruptcies, and I talked about this last week, are on track for 10-year high. Not just commercial, but civilian, the public. Glump it all together. Bankruptcies are flying off the shelves. People are filing bankruptcy. I couldn't believe some of the people. What else are they going to do? They have no income because they have conformed like good little sheeple to our ruling elite who say that we have to close our businesses down, become destitute, or we might die. At least die, or the government would come in and shut you down. But they're not in the Western states, not in any state. That's the only people that's having major problems are in the states that are controlled by communists. If you want to use the word Democrat, be my guest. But these are communists. California, Oregon, Washington, New York, New Jersey. You get my drift. Okay. Saudi Arabia, the OPEC, the oil-producing Muslim nations, think that we're getting oil too cheap, so they're going to be turning it off turning off the taps is what they call it. They're turning off the taps so that we get less and less oil, so the oil prices go up again. This is the cycle. This is how it works. And we are not a self-producing energy source. The United States is not. If we were, the oil prices, who would care what they charge? Because we wouldn't be buying any from them. Now, this foretells what's going to happen during this coming election. This one little article here. The Fed seized over 20,000 fake state driver licenses. Over 20,000. Now, these are for all kinds of different people. They caught them at O'Hara Airport. All of them are registered to vote, and all of them are Democrats. These are fake licenses. What they're based on are dead people. So they simply look at the obituaries and they make a driver's license for that person. This is just the tip of the iceberg. But it comes out of Hong Kong, China, South Korea. And this is just one hit. This is just one. There are a lot of them there. I had a friend about 10 years ago that used to sell these fake driver's licenses on the internet. You just tell him if you're male and around what year you want to pretend you were born. And for $150, he'll sell you one of these things. He's in a federal prison right now for 3 to 5. Be that as it may. So they were available, and now they're going to be used. The Democrats, and I already proved this in one of my shows, I showed you all the data proving the Democrats have been the ones that have packed voting booths with fraudulent votes for over 100 years, and they're going to do the same thing this year. And they're trying this new scam of mail-in voting, except that everybody who is an expert, quote-unquote, on this COVID horse crap has already said, yeah, it's no problem. Just keep 6 feet apart or standing in line to go in and vote. No, not a problem whatsoever. Those of you in California, there is a inland sea there. It's called the Salton Sea. And it's not really a sea. It's like the Great Salt Lake, but only half as salty. But it is where one of the major earthquake faults start in the United States. And it kind of goes, this quake, fault goes straight up in California. In the past week, they have had over 100 earthquakes in that area. This is freaking out the powers that be in California, because this has never happened before. And there's no actual geological activity happening in that area, except out of the blue, boom, all of these earthquakes started up. I'll have a link to it on my website. You go to armchairsurvivalist.com on the left-hand side. You'll see a link up there that says show notes. You click on that, and that'll take you to a page that lists all my shows chronologically and a little blurb about what the show is about. So you figure out what date you want to research. You click on that, and it'll take you to an individual page that actually shows you everything I'm talking about and where I get the data. Just a word to the wise. Don't just listen to me and say, oh, look, I believe everything he says. Well, that's why I put up source. I am not like these politicians that pull stuff out of their hat and talk about it. I have source where you can go, and I've verified everything. I don't know how much you guys have noticed about the availability of food in the United States. You go into a store now, like I went into Safeway the other day, and all of the cans of whatever it is on one shelf is all moved to the front to make it look like they're full. But it's like two cans of Campbell's tomato soup, two, and then the rest of the row is empty. So there's all of these things that are emptying out, even though you might not see it if you don't pay attention. But there are a lot of people all over the United States that are paying attention, and they're realizing this. There's in many states, Texas is one. I've had two calls, one from, Phoenix and one from Dallas. They have food lines. The government comes out, or a food organization comes out and says, hey, from 9 till noon tomorrow, just line up. We don't care who you are. We'll give you a packet of food. Those lines are mile long. And I'm not exaggerating. There's videos of them a mile long. There are people that are pushing their cars by hand so they don't run out of gas. They get in a line and then they wait until the cars move forward and then they push their car forward. Strangely sounding not, but I did that when I was a kid. We were so poor that we would have to drive to Oakland for the Salvation Army would have food. And they would give out food to the people there. And we would pull our car up, and my mom had a 1961 Mercury Comet. And we would put it in neutral and just wait. Now, she'd sit in the driver's seat, of course. And as soon as the line moved, she'd take it out of park, and us kids would push it forward. Now, no power steering, no power brakes, so that's fine. But this is happening all over the place. These food lines are happening all over the place. And there's something that just popped up. I saw a little blurb in a newspaper in Washington State. It's 15 miles west of me. And they were talking about how, and this was a expose, shall we say. And they were talking about how they're storing food. They have thousands and thousands of pallets, Washington State government. Pallets of food are being stored. And then I started doing some research, because I haven't heard anything from any other state. But I have contacted Mountain House Freeze-Dried Foods and a few other dehydrating companies, and they're out of stock. And they're telling everybody, yeah, 2 to 3 month back, you know, order, and we'll get this stuff out to you. Well, where's it going? Who's buying it all? Turns out states are. In the United States, individual states are buying large quantities of food. Now, I am a member of the Department of Homeland Security, quote unquote. They don't know this, but I am. So I get all kinds of briefings all day long. I get different emails, everything from Customs and Border Patrol, from shipping, transportation, the FDA, USDA. And I also get notices of contracts being requested. And I'm seeing contracts of requested amounts of foods, of storage foods, long-term storage foods. And I Tennessee, Missouri, West Virginia, Florida, all of these different states. But that's what's happening. And the Ice Age farmer has something to say about that.
The states are stockpiling food, tons of it. We're learning now, suddenly. After months of being told everything's fine, there's no need for you to panic. In fact, they've discouraged you from buying goods. And remember, they even blamed the shortages of canned goods that we've seen in the store on you for buying too many canned goods. But it turns out that was all bollocks. Now we're learning the states have been stockpiling. This report from the Seattle Times, from peanut butter to applesauce, Washington State stockpiles tons of food. Why? For the need ahead. Because they know there are massive interruptions to our supply chain already, that these are escalating, that there are cascading failures building on themselves, that there are harvest labor failures coming in, and that there will be food shortages directly ahead for all of us. It's also baked into the plan. So it's no surprise that they're preparing for this. And look at the language they're using. These canned beans in the stockpiles are sitting there like soldiers waiting to be sent into duty. Even the language they're using tells us this is a food wars situation.
What you're looking at here in this Fife warehouse is about 1,200 pallets of food.
The purpose of this is to provide sort of a reservoir for shelf-stable food that is entering the system to support our hunger prevention efforts around the state.
Derek Sanderson, director of the Washington State Department of Agriculture, toured the state's new COVID strategic reserve on Friday. Within 48 hours of communities asking for help, these pallets can be placed on trucks and distributed to food pantries across the state. The focus is on stockpiling foods like canned vegetables, peanut butter, items that don't spoil easily. During the early days of the pandemic, they were also hard to come by at times as folks hoarded items, left store shelves bare, and disrupted the supply chain.
Yes, see, it's still your fault. You hoarded all those items, and that's why we have to go to all the trouble to fill up this warehouse from floor to ceiling. I really just wanted to share those images so you get the sense of what it looks like to see that much food. Look at the floor to ceiling. All right, so the article from the Seattle Times goes on to describe how the Washington State Department of Agriculture began to stockpile and prepare back in mid-April. Ladies and gentlemen, that's over 4 months ago. We're only now hearing about this, and moreover, we're certainly not hearing about this from any other place in the United States. You can find out about stockpiles of masks. There's plenty of news and propaganda about the stockpiles of ventilators in New York City, but there's nothing about stockpiles of food until this piece from the Seattle Times. And I've tried to look. There is, however, one more critical piece of intel that we learned from the head of the Washington Department of Agriculture when he did this interview.
Extremely high demand. We're competing with every other state. We're competing in some cases with national organizations that are trying to feed America.
And there's the key, ladies and gentlemen. We are competing with all the other states. Heck, we're even competing with federal agencies to try and buy up as much food as quickly as we can. We've been doing it for months now, since mid-April. And we did it all secretly, without telling you, so that you couldn't get prepared. In fact, moreover, we told you not to get prepared. We told you that you should, you should think about it, because you'll be inconveniencing other people if you start stockpiling. We told you you would have bean buyer's remorse if you were so dumb as to go out and buy beans thinking you might need food. Thanks, NPR. Can you believe the duplicitousness of these people that out of one corner of their mouth, they tell you you should be ashamed if you try and take care of your family? Wow. With the other hand, they're out buying up as much food as they can, competing with all the other states. Look at this. They spent $6.1 million over these last few months on 4,000 pallets of food. And importantly, only a quarter of those have even arrived yet. That's why there's no food there. That's why if you go try and backorder stored food, it's not going to come for months now. Because all the other states and federal agencies have ordered millions of dollars of it, and it's already on back order even for them. Can you believe this? This is why there are canned food shortages. They told you it was because of you buying too many cans. That's why you can't have your beer now or your cherry Coke. We read these releases. Oh, it's because you bought too much canned food. No, it's because they're spending millions of dollars per state to stock all this food up away from you. This is why I'm hearing from purchasing managers on the floor of big retail establishments who say, I don't get it, Christian. I'm putting in orders for X and Y and Z, and I'm getting half of an X and a tenth of a Y, and I didn't even get any Z. What the hell's going on here? No one even has answers for me at corporate. Well, now we know. Now we see what's going on behind the scenes. They've hijacked the supply chain. They're hoovering it up into these warehouses because, as we just read from the Rockefeller Foundation, they want to dismantle the entire food system in America. They want people to depend on these neighborhood nutritional insurance programs. They want you to be on EBT and SNAP benefits and all these things because it makes you dependent on the system. They see food as part of this universal basic income, and they want everybody to be on it. And this is how you do it. You break everything down. You destroy the economy. We absolutely have food shortages ahead. These are the very same. In fact, the Rockefeller Foundation is full of, I'm working on a larger report about this. They are full of the very same people who are now working to shut down the meatpacking factories, who are working to shut down the farms via the labor unions. They're suing the USDA to slow down production. These are the very one and the same group of people that is shutting down the food supply, and they're trying to enslave people. It's really just, it's too much to even take in at this point, but let's let it stand on its own that the states have been stockpiling secretly for months while discouraging you from doing the same. And given the food problems we're seeing around the world, the fact that we just lost a tenth or more of our corn crop, massive flooding in China, the flooding in Japan, there's flooding all over the place, and Brazil having problems with their crops and harvest labor as well. There are problems around the world right now, and we all need to be thinking about our food security, and I think this is a pretty good indicator. They are certainly doing that. They are preparing, and so must we be. Let's leave it there for tonight. I just want to make it abundantly clear that they are indicating quite clearly that there are additional supply chain disruptions and food shortages ahead, that the states and the federal agencies know about this. They have known for months. Even as they told you not to prepare, they have absolutely been stockpiling their warehouses to the roof. This is now literally, you can see the pictures of this happening. As always, the message is, let other people know about what's going on. Because right now, these people are actively working against us. They are trying to enslave us and deprive us of the basic necessities so that we are forced to acquiesce to their totalitarian agenda.
Of course, we all know he's an optimist, right? This is what I've been telling everybody for so long. It's ridiculous. Those of you out there who have listened to me, spend a couple $100 a month. What's it going to hurt? Spend a couple $100 a month, if you have it, of course, and buy food. I don't care. Tuna, peanut butter. Don't buy anything in cardboard boxes. Buy things in tin cans or like peanut butters in plastic jars or even glass jars. Glass jars are great. We get these giant peanut butter jars, real big peanut butter jars. What do they hold, like a quart? And it's glass. And when we're done with it, well, my wife reuses it to when we clean out Felix's litter box. That's what we... All right, anyway, so... All right, now we're going to get into a category. And sometimes I have to do some arbitrary categories because everything changes. But this is going to be the COVID category. There is a big problem that is starting to pop up, and dentists are starting to notice this more than other people. And we have dentists that come in here at Survival Enterprises in Hayden on Government Avenue. And they were talking about people are starting to get gum disease from wearing a mask. Now, the research that I have seen and the summaries that I have read, masks are worthless. They do not protect you from a virus. The virus is too small. It'll pass right through any mask that you're going to wear, period. I don't care what you got. And here's the other thing. Viruses are mostly spread by eyes. Your eyes are two big, round, mucous membranes sitting right out in front of everything. And all day long, you're going to be scratching and rubbing at your eye. If you have any kind of disease, I don't care what it is, on your hands, that's how you get it. The mask doesn't do a damn bit of good. But, as a matter of fact, the only time that science has shown a N95 mask necessary is in an operating theater. And they don't recommend wearing the same mask more than 30 minutes at a time. Because the bacteria from inside of your lungs and inside of your mouth is being captured on the inside of your mask. And then you're rebreathing it. So people are getting what's called mask mouth. What's happening is they're getting gum disease. Lack of oxygen is a given. There are people passing out on a daily basis because they stupidly wear these damn masks for 8 hours a day. But they're getting rotting teeth. Well, they used to have something called meth mouth, which is, you know, somebody smiles and they got black rotted teeth all through their mouth. Well, that's because they've been doing meth too long. Now they call it mask mouth, and it's showing up the same effects. Teeth are rotting. Gums are rotting. People are having digestive problems. People are developing sinusitis. There are so many medical problems associated with these masks. It's astounding. And here's the thing. The same people that bring their own fabric bag to a store and then put fruits and vegetables and stuff in their own bag, right? Okay. So you get all the stuff in that bag and you go home, take it out. Now you have microscopic particles of food captured inside this bag. And they just leave the bag sitting, so the food starts to putrefy. So bacteria starts growing. Then they take that bag to the store next week, no shopping. You see what happens here? So they're infecting themselves because they don't wash the bag. Well, guess what the people aren't doing either? They're not washing their masks. So they have this new thing of all these pretty weird masks that you can buy. Form-fitting, makes you look like some demon or something. And you take it off at night, set it down, pick it up in the morning, put it on, and you do that for a week. And then you wonder why you end up getting sick and think maybe you got to go get tested for COVID. It's because you're reinfecting yourself. This is well known. But it's also, here's a funny part. Now we're in, underneath the category of food and health, all right? So there are these creatures, you call them Democrats, they're actually communists, in Wisconsin. And they're telling people they need to wear masks at home. Okay, so Zoom is this application that you can get for your computer that you can have a conference call with 10 to 100 different people. And each person has their own little square that their camera shows them. So you see their face. So these businesses and the government are telling people, if you're going to do a Zoom conference, or if you're working from home and people are going to see you, make sure you wear your mask to a virtue signal, basically. This is ridiculous. This is what happens when communists gain power. Their power goes to their head and they start making stuff up. Speaking of making stuff up, Anthony Fauci, he's supposed to be the big cheese when it comes to this disease, and everybody's supposed to listen to him and believe everything he says, except he knew all along that chloroquine and its less potent cousin, hydroxychloroquine, will treat and prevent SARS and COVID. Hydroxychloroquine, he knew this. How did he know it? Because on August 22nd, 2005, in the Virology Journal, he had an article published, chloroquine is a potent inhibitor of SARS coronavirus infection and spread. He knew this from 05. You get that? He knew it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Now, everything I say, remember what I said. I have the source to it. Remember last week I talked about how the CEO, the two biggest people in Moderna, this is a pharmaceutical company that's developing a vaccine for this so-called coronavirus, that they sold all their shares. Well, guess who owns them? Who's who bought all those shares? National Institute of Health. Who's in charge of the National Institute of Health? Fauci. When this vaccine gets developed and sold, the NIH, National Institute of Health, is going to get 50% of the profits. See how this works? It's all money. Who's going to benefit from it happening? Houston Methodist Hospital is running some tests on a new drug. It's called RLF-100. It's also known as Aviptadil, A-V-I-P-T-A-D-I-L, and it has been approved by the FDA for emergency use at multiple clinical sites in patients who are too ill to enter the FDA's phase 2 or 3 trials. So they're using this on patients who are really, really bad, and they're off the ventilators in 2 or 3 days. So this Aviptadil is something that's going to be out there, and you're going to be hearing about that. And it's not Aviptadil, it's Aviptadil, no R, Aviptadil. So I'll have an article on that, you can read that thing, but it's Aviptadil, or the short name, RLF-100. And it's actually working. It's, hydrochloroquine works on patients who are not in critical condition. It works in the first phase, if you understand trimester. It works in the first trimester, basically, when you're sick with COVID. This stuff works on the third trimester, Aviptadil. Let's see, this is going to throw a monkey wrench into it. A New York City Democrat, a councilman, he got sick. He had the doctors put him on hydroxychloroquine. And within days, he was well. He said, this is it. I couldn't breathe. I was weak. I couldn't get out of bed. Doctor prescribed it. My pharmacy had it. Took it that day. And within 2 to 3 days, I was able to breathe and everything was fine. And within a week, I was back on my feet. So this guy is a proponent for this hydroxychloroquine. A woman in Canada, Ontario doctor, she's treating people with hydroxychloroquine. And of course, she's also talking about it, which is making her an evil enemy of the state. So they're after her for that. There are articles and news stories popping up like crazy of state medical examiners having to re-examine people because they were claimed to have died of COVID-19, and it turned out they died of kidney infection or gunshot to the head. One blatant example was a Florida nurse, and I have the article for that, where she died of COVID-19, but she didn't. She died of a kidney infection. There is a doctor in Thailand. He is world known. He said that he has traveled to 15 different countries, and not one person that these countries claim died of COVID has died of COVID-19. Not one person. Every single person dies of a secondary or tertiary disease. They either have two or three or four other things wrong with them at one time, and then COVID comes in and just that's the coup de grace. Oh, Russia come out, by the way, and of course Russia always is the first, and says, oh yeah, we got a coronavirus vaccine. Say, yeah. Oh, by the way, I gave it to my daughter, and she's fine. She grew a third eye, but she's fine. I hope you don't live in Australia. Anybody listening to me, Australia, New Zealand, they have gone full Nazi. If you dare to walk on the street without a mask, they will tackle you, take you down, handcuff you, drag you off to the hospital. Or they'll break the windows in your car. If you're out driving, going to a friend's house, and they stop you, and you don't roll your window down, they will break the window and pull you out of there. Yeah, that's happening too much. There is a new, now they call this an ad, but it's actually an explanation, and you have to hear it.
Stop what you're doing. I'm about to show you something you already suspect deep inside, but can't explain. The United States of America is currently in the midst of a war. Not the kind when one country attacks another with missiles or tanks. Not like warplanes dropping bombs on our Pacific fleet. Not like a hostile neighbor launching a surprise invasion across our borders. Instead, we face a cruel and merciless enemy who invented a whole new type of war. One that threatens us now more than all the bombs in the world. They are motivated by pure greed and inconceivable cruelty, and have been silently reversing all that is good for so long that we became lulled into a state of self-destructive compliance while they tore us apart and robbed us blind. When patriots took back key branches of the U.S. government in 2016, the light was turned on to the vast corruption network that had infiltrated into the highest positions of power across every state. Only then did ordinary citizens begin to realize how close we had come to the end of it all. But first, we must endure one last painful battle that will touch every citizen, no matter who they are. Right now, the country is being torn apart by the biggest political hoax and coordinated mass media disinformation campaign in living history. You may know it as COVID-19. Let me tell you a story. In 2015, as directed by the globalist criminal corruption network known as the Deep State, President Barack Obama authorized millions in funding for the Wuhan Institute of Virology, the location now understood to be the epicenter of the COVID-19 outbreak. The research carried out here was to provide the agent for a global biological attack on a scale never before seen, one that would be timed for release within an election year, starting the very day unsubstantiated efforts to impeach President Trump fell apart. With their base of operations in the Democrat establishment, the Deep State Shadow Corporation embarked on a coordinated irregular warfare insurgency with multiple aims, all under the cover of a global pandemic they themselves manufactured for this purpose. Enabled by their owned and controlled corporate media monopoly, they instigated a heavy-handed and unjustifiable nationwide shutdown to reverse Trump's many economic and unemployment gains. With Democrat-controlled states suffering the harshest restrictions in the country, Trump's energetic rallies were halted, hiding from view the surging nationwide passion for his galvanizing message. While Democratic presidential frontrunner Joe Biden was able to avoid interviews and debates where left-leaning voters would not be shown his obvious inability to govern, or the emerging Ukrainian bribery scandal that earned his family millions in illicit kickbacks by abusing his office. The next major advantage of the pandemic for the deep state was the case made to the public for mail-in voting, a highly insecure practice proven to be rampant with fraud. Just as the public saw in one such example, when a former Philadelphia judge pled guilty to stuffing ballot boxes after being paid by what he called a Democrat political consultant. With a rapidly rising death toll needed to make the case to the public for even harsher control, normal influenza deaths for the year were recorded as COVID-19, artificially inflating the numbers. But this was only the beginning. When this did not yield enough fatalities, the deep state initiated a murderous plan to defy federal guidelines and to move infected patients into nursing homes where the highest risk age group could be found in large numbers. The deep state governors of New York, New Jersey, California, Pennsylvania, and Michigan oversaw what can only be described as a genocide of our elderly loved ones, even as the quickly constructed field hospitals and medically equipped Navy ships stood mostly empty. This horrendous act cost the lives of over 50,000 people, but gave the insurgency a death toll that would stoke the public fear needed to push ahead with their goals. In these dark times, when people had little else but the comfort of community in their faith, this too was forcibly halted when simply going to church was banned across the country under the guise of public safety. Depression and loneliness became the new epidemic, all designed to create the social conditions needed for what was to come next in their despotic plan to fracture the nation and hold on to power. Immediately upon reports of a flattening curve and a reduction in new cases, the mysterious murder of George Floyd hit the headlines. What was presented to the public as a routine instance of racially motivated police brutality turned out to be a strange and coincidental series of events involving two men who once knew each other, working security in a nightclub. This event provided the justification for the next chapter in their coordinated insurgency against the United States. The goal was to inflame civil unrest along racial lines on an emotional platform of social justice. A divided house cannot stand, and the enemy knew this all too well. Black Lives Matter was funded and designed by the corrupt Democrat establishment as a social weapon to draw crowds of well-meaning protesters into harm's way, using them as human shields while they pushed a savage insurrection on city streets. This was intensified even further by folding in the violent paramilitary group Antifa, who were given a free pass by Democrat mayors and governors to loot stores, smash up small businesses, and assault innocent bystanders. The public was shown in explicit detail how Democrat leaders refused to protect local citizens, choosing instead to provide an open road for the anarchists to destabilize civil society, allowing the innocent to be indiscriminately injured and terrorized. Knowing that lawless chaos would accelerate their aims, they began calling for the elimination of police while evicting the National Guard, who were made available to protect the public against the worst of the violence. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser even called for the elimination of the White House fence, just days after a close call by rioters who attempted to breach the perimeter. And on June 22nd, Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff proposed a House bill to amend United States Code Title 18 that would prohibit the use of military force in the event of civil unrest. An obvious attempt to weaken the Commander-in-Chief's ability to defend the public from the planned insurrection, which was intended to play out over the weeks and months leading up to the election.
Attorney General William Barr has appointed the U.S. Attorney in Connecticut to investigate.
The pandemic was also providing cover of a different kind. Taking place behind the scenes at the Justice Department is a far-reaching investigation into the Obama administration's weaponization of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court to spy on Trump and his associates during the transition of power. With evidence now emerging that Obama officials, including Joe Biden and Obama himself, colluded to frame General Michael Flynn. They used social distancing guidelines to halt grand juries and give witnesses the cover of health fears to avoid honoring court-ordered subpoenas. What you are witnessing is the dying breaths of a hidden enemy responsible for over a century of embedded corruption that has been slowly destroying our republic from the inside. They divided us along racial, gender, and political lines. They created reasons for us to go to war. They made international trade agreements that brought us no benefit, but allowed them to steal our vast wealth, driving us into a state of perpetual economic decay. They flooded our streets with deadly drugs to manufacture a devastating epidemic of addiction and mass incarceration. And they did it all with impunity while their completely controlled mainstream media assets kept us distracted and focused on everything else except our one true enemy. The 2020 U.S. elections are like none we have ever experienced. COVID-19 is being sold as a natural event, but we see now it is an attempt by enemies of humanity to hold on to power. After November, they stand to lose it all. but they will do everything to keep the crisis alive and the people in fear. To win, we must remember what made us strong, so that true justice can finally return to what is, and always will be, the most exceptional republic ever to exist in all of human history.
Whether I like it or not, now we've got to get into the category of the liberal psychosis. This is the party of racism, intolerance, anger, hate, and fear. You would know them as the Democrat Party. I simply call them communists. Our Attorney General has got tired of listening to the media talk about how all of these protests are peaceful. And you can go anywhere. ABC, NBC, CBS, I don't care who it is. Even Fox News. And you'll hear about the peaceful protests that were taken over by the looters. No, I'm sorry. All the protests are created and performed by the looters who, when it gets dark, start looting. It's that simple. So remember, we're under the liberal psychosis. So you're going to hear things that are psychotic and you're going to just go, what the hell? And not all of them are in order. They're Antifa, what do I say? What is Antifa? Antifa is a group of psychotics. These are everything that you can imagine in your mind that's evil and disgusting. That's what makes up Antifa, same as the Democrat Party. Except these people are proud of it because their whole job is the destruction of the United States. No ifs, ands, or buts. George Floyd has nothing to do with this. Blacks have nothing to do with this. It's the destruction of the United States. So what they have, Portland, by the way, is taken over from, Antifa is full control in downtown Portland. So they had a big display of a bunch of sexual perverts and trannies and it's just weird, strange, semi-humanoid creatures praying to Satan downtown. I don't know, but you need, and this isn't the best definition, but it is close enough as I can get in 2 minutes to what Antifa is.
Antifa is a movement that is making headlines throughout Canada, Germany, the United Kingdom, and most especially the United States. With Antifa regularly making the news, people are now asking, what is Antifa? And what are Antifa's goals? Now, Antifa is actually not a new political force. It's a loosely connected network of groups named in honor of the military wing of the Communist Party of Germany. Antifa is an abbreviation for the phrase anti-fascist, and the movement was founded in the 1920s as part of the Soviet Union's efforts to transform Germany into a communist dictatorship. By labeling all rival parties as fascist, Antifa hoped to convince the Germans that the nation's mainstream political parties in the 1920s and 1930s were no better than the Nazis. This strategy convinced millions of German workers to join the ranks of the Communist Party of Germany. The Antifa movement experienced a resurgence in the 1980s, when far-left activists in Germany and the United States resurrected the group's strategy of labeling free market capitalists and constitutional conservatives as fascists. In the United States, Antifa leaders specifically linked capitalism to white supremacy. Antifa seeks to undermine and destroy capitalism, the police, the government, and the U.S. Constitution. By creating an environment where people lose faith in government institutions, Antifa hopes to swell its own ranks and the ranks of allied groups like the Democratic Socialist of America. There are already over 200 Antifa cells in the United States, and public opinion polls suggest that up to 5% of the American public are sympathetic to Antifa's cause. By polarizing the political scene into fascist and anti-fascist camps, Antifa is destroying the democratic center, just like it did in the 1920s in Germany. Antifa encourages violence not just against fascists, but also against free speech advocates and police officers. And by inciting violence at otherwise peaceful protests, Antifa activists hope to tear down America's constitutional system of government and replace it with a communist regime. This strategy is pushing the United States to the brink of civil war.
Still talking about Portland, last Saturday night, some of these peaceful protesters broke into another police building and set it on fire from the inside out. Oregon, by the way, the problem that's happening in these communist-controlled countries like Oregon is that you have a communist mayor, you have a communist district attorney, you have a communist governor, you have all these sexual perverts that are in charge of everything. So all the evil that's being done, and the police are capturing these people who are looting and burning and mugging, and then the district attorneys turn them loose. So the Oregon State Patrol said, you know what, we're no longer going to be protecting Portland. We're gone. Bye. The mayor of Portland had requested the Oregon State Patrol come in to help protect Portland from the looters. Then the mayor tells him, you can't do anything. Just smile at him and wave as they run by you and break the window at Macy's. So the Oregon State Patrol said, that's it, we're done. Chicago, another scum, gutter, trash piece of El Toro caca, did a crime, took off running, cops after him, he's shooting at them, he gets nailed by them. So the lowlifes decide, you know what, that's a good enough excuse. Let's riot. Boom, they rioted. In fact, it was so bad, and they're still doing it in Chicago. They're bragging about it. You know, it's I don't understand this. Somebody commits a crime, and the next thing you know, you see him on Facebook holding his phone up saying, hey, look at here. Look at what I just stole. Look at this. I got four of them. I mean, he's filming himself. These idiots are filming themselves. Chicago raised their bridges so that people couldn't get into the city. Well, unfortunately, what that does is lock all the criminals in the city. So they're looting like crazy. And remember I told you, one of the tricks that the scum are using is that they're teaching all black people, when you commit a crime, instantly start yelling, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. All right, do that. So here's this video of this female looter very calmly talking to, oh, I don't know, 10 or 15 other black looters in the store, and she's on the second floor. And then the police start coming in, and she's yelling while she's grabbing mink coats and stuff and running out the door, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. Yeah. And then the Black Lives Matter holds a rally that demands all of the looters that were arrested by the police, and there was over 100 of them, be turned loose. Yeah, so the mayor of Portland, they're just, I don't even want to get into that. That's so crazy. If you took every sexual psychosis that you can imagine, pedophilia is the most sane version of these people, and turn them loose and put them into politics, that's what you have for Oregon, especially in Portland. Like in Chicago, though, you have a lesbian, black lesbian communist, who's married to it's a transvestite that's been, I don't know, what do they do, whack it off or tuck it under, whatever they do. And while all the Chicago looting's going on, this wacko says, you know, I'm really upset because they're not social distancing. I don't understand. And that's the thing, you know. It must be because I'm white. Is that they're going to say that. They're going to say, you don't understand because you're white and you've never been poor and you've never been this and you've never been that. My ancestors were blankety blank. And so I deserve to have you do this. I'm sorry. I just don't grasp the whole concept of victimhood. Maybe that's because I am white.
Nope.
It's because I was raised to not believe I was a victim. The top Chicago prosecutor, Kim Fox. Now, do you remember the man and woman who defended their property, the woman with this pistol that actually the firing pin was in backwards, so it wouldn't have shot anyway, and the man with an AR-15 chased all the scum off his property? They're being charged by Kim Fox, and this is the top Chicago prosecutor. She's dismissed over 25,000 felony cases. Over 25,000. What? Dismissed them. Nope. You're black. You're fine. Go away. Manhattan DA dropped felony charges against a Black Lives Matter leader. So New York Police Department decided to pull. See, the New York PD has been posting officers in prosecutors' offices now for 50 years. Right? As guards, as help. They're pulling out. New York PD pulls out because prosecutor's not prosecuting anyone. Seattle City Council votes 7-1 to defund the police department. Now, remember what I talked about two times. Shipping companies will not be going into cities that have defunded the police department. Not all of them. There's some of them that are still going to be driving in and putting their drivers at risk. Because that's one of the things that's hit right away. Any truck carrying product, any 18-wheeler is going to get hit by these looters. So Seattle has just come out and said, all right, we're going to defund the police department. Within 30 minutes, the black lesbian female chief of police of Seattle quit. She said, I'm out of here September 21st, September 30th, whatever it is. The end of September, I'm gone. I'm out of here. I've already had these BLM come to my door, and I'm stopped. I don't want any more part of this. I'm out of here. I'm gone. She knows what's going to happen to her. And that's the thing. Communists eat their own. They don't care. They don't care if you're a commie. You're a example. Now, a chief of police in Georgia, former Johns Creek police chief Chris Byers, he agreed to a confidential settlement. Now, what's this all about? Oh, it's because he criticized Black Lives Matter on his Facebook page. So the city said, well, no, we can't have that. You must be a white supremacist. And he's like, I'm done. And that's what happens. Ladies and gentlemen, what are you going to do when they just walk away? When law enforcement says, you know, I'm done. I'm not going to fight you, the citizens, and the criminals at the same time. I'm done. Now, the city of Dallas. You know, I'm sorry, Texas, but you're toast. Yeah, every major city in Texas is ran by communists or sexual perverts or both or the same, especially Dallas. They'll allow Black Lives Matter to have all kinds of protests. But a conservative group, the Young Americans for Liberty, paid to come to Dallas and have a convention. Everything was set up. And at the exact last minute, Dallas canceled it. Because these were Young Americans for Liberty. They weren't Black Lives Matter. Have you heard about what Hasbro did? Now, I've seen this. Over the years, I've seen these toys come out from different companies. And one of them would have breasts with nipples on them, colored in. Other one would have a male genitalia. Here's one from Hasbro that they're being forced to recall.
Down here is a button right here on her privates. And if you push those, she makes these sounds.
Hasbro pulls Trolls Doll over complaints of an inappropriate button. What the f***? That's right, this innocent-looking troll doll actually has a secret button underneath it in its private parts, and when you touch it, it giggles and makes weird noises.
Hasbro tried to explain that. No. It was so, if the doll fell over, it would make a giggling sound. Yeah, right. We're going to go from Hasbro to the gay area, San Francisco, Bay Area. There's a senator there named Scott Wiener. Mm-hmm. So he has decided that we need to go the rest of the way now. And we're going to, I'm introducing a bill to decriminalize pedophilia with boys. Not with girls, because that would be rape. So we want to have men to be able to have sex with boys. Now, his name is Senator Wiener. Be that as it may, I bet you can guess what political party he's part of. You know how all the schools are closed, right? Yep, all the schools closed. So Arizona school district, an Arizona school district is closed, right? And they decided, well, what the hell? Let's make some money. So they're reopening the school for daycare, and they're charging parents $160 a week for daycare in the same place that they can't have school. So they're doing daycare there. The deep state has its tendrils in everything. Everything. The federal government's premier nuclear research lab hosted a 3-day re-education camp for white males. It's to teach them how to deconstruct the white male culture. And this is the Sandia National Laboratory. It's called the White Men's Caucus on Eliminating Racism, Sexism, and Homophobia in Organizations. This is disgusting. And these people are doing this. I don't understand why they get away with it. I don't understand why they get away with doing it. And who are these wussies that allow it? And say, oh yes, I need to no longer be white. I need to be something but not white. I can be nothing. I can be nothing, but I can't be white, but I am white. But I can't be white because I'm it's bad. This is the psychosis that's being put into all of these people. And they're falling for it. They're falling for it. I don't understand. The end of September is going to be something. Now, it could be nothing, but it might be something. A group plans to lay siege to the White House, and they're posting it all over social network. They intend to lay siege to and occupy the White House. It's been 9 years since we set off the political earthquake of Occupy Wall Street, laying siege to New York City's Zuccotti Park, and inspiring thousands of similar protests around the world. So now, on the anniversary, September 17th, it'll be the perfect day to trigger another global Big Bang movement. This time, they're going to go to the White House. They're going to go into the White House, and they're going to occupy it. Let's see how well that goes. I wish them luck. Even though I and thousands of other people like me and louder than me and smarter than me have talked about this thing that I'm going to talk about, most of you just ignore it. Pretend it's not there. Data harvesting. Most of you have smartphones, and you download these apps because they're so cool and they're easy to use, and why look, it doesn't cost me a penny. Except 99% of every apps you download, in the fine print, it says we're going to basically monitor everything you do, everywhere you go, everything you say. There are companies out there. One of them is called Anomaly 6 LLC. Draws location data from over 500 apps. Over 500 apps. They track hundreds of millions of phones. This is just one of the independent contract companies that work for the powers that be, big government, big tech, the deep state. They harvest information from you that you don't even know you're doing. I have heard from so many people saying, well, I'm not afraid. I don't have anything to hide. Blah, blah, blah. And then they wonder why they're starting to get all these different ads on their TV. You get an app. Let's say you get this game, and I don't know what game. This could be Blow Up the Cherries, and it's free, and it's enticing, and it's like it's really cool to play, and you got to think and react fast, and all of this. And it doesn't. There's no ads in it. There's nothing in it, except that it's accessed your phone's GPS. It has accessed a motion detector in your phone, so it knows if you're moving, if you're in a vehicle while you're playing it, if you're sedentary while you're playing it, right? If you're in an area that's humid, it knows everything about it. This is just one of these companies. One. Then there was a hack, and this is the big thing, data accumulation. This is why I don't like Facebook, because people actually put their name, address, date of birth, when their birthdays are. Because I used to get these little blurbs that said, hey, today's Fred Lipschitz's birthday. Wish him a happy birthday. And people would post pictures of their private stuff, their house. Look, I just put a new driveway in. And then you got a picture of the front of this guy's house. And this is the same guy that posted a picture with 15 firearms on his bed. And he said, look at all the guns I got. These people are bone stupid, but that's what is, unfortunately, they vote. And this is what's happening all over. Somebody hacked a Maine State Police unit, intelligence unit in Maine. Somebody hacked it. They found thousands of cases of files that the police had just accumulated data from newspaper articles and from YouTube and from Facebook and from Twitter on all kinds of citizens. And this isn't just the one police department that has done this. So we're being tracked, we're being monitored, we're being downloaded. Our data is being placed in so many data banks and fusion centers is what they're called. A fusion center is where data from like the San Francisco Police Department, the Berkeley Police Department, the San Jose County Sheriff's Department, the San Francisco FBI, all of these law enforcement agencies feed all of their data, everything. They stop you for running a red light and they give you a warning. You know, the first thing a cop does is come up to your car and says, give me your license and registration and insurance, please. And then he goes back and he does what's known as running wants and warrants. Wants to see if there's any information out there on you. Wants to see if you're wanted or anyone or anything. And then he wants to see, is your license up to date? Is this the right license on this car? He's running all of this data. While he's running that data, the data he's inputting, the location, why he stopped you, how many people are in your car, all of that data is being fed into a fusion center and being accumulated. And this is happening a million times a minute in the United States alone. Anyway, that's just a word of warning to you guys. Now, I got an update from the Department of Homeland Security, the Transportation Safety Administration. They release, and I get this on a weekly basis, they release a list of all the things they have confiscated from people at checkpoints in the line to get onto your flight. You know, you're allowed, you check things and you carry your baggage or whatever you want to carry, a backpack, a purse, even a small suitcase. You carry it on board with you. Well, they're finding more and more guns compared to last year. Now, look, people, just so you know, they frown upon anybody carrying a weapon aboard the aircraft, including fingernail clippers, pocket knives, pretend bombs, guns, spears, swords, that kind of stuff. Obviously, logic eludes many people. Now, you can check these things before you get in line to go up onto, get into your plane. You know, you can fly with your firearms. You unload them, obviously, and you package them in a safe little container, you know, a little gun box or something, put it in your briefcase, and you tell them, I have a firearm. And they will look at it, they will verify it's been checked, and then they'll write a little piece of paper and sit it there in your box so that the next TSA, I want to call them airport Nazi, next time one of them checks it, they won't freak out. Don't think that you're going to get away in any way, shape, or form carrying a firearm aboard a plane. They're catching more now. We're talking usually they do about 4,000 to 5,000 firearms they find every year. Now it's about 5,000 to 6,000 they're finding. Granted, where most of you want to fly is a large city, and you have Black Lives Matter and other low-life pieces of canine excrement floating around there, so you'd want to be protected. But don't carry them aboard the plane, okay? TSA has no sense of humor. They actually can arrest you. Most of the time, they'll just confiscate it. You got a $700 custom-made 45, and you take it aboard an airplane, you just lost it. It is going to end up in some government agent's pocket. It's just how it works. You know, I was torn whether or not to talk about this one. But I got to, because many times I've said certain breeds of people create their own future by being stupid and evil. Law enforcement, unfortunately, especially nowadays, is afraid. And when you get cops that are afraid, they get trigger happy. They don't know what's going to happen, and they have less than 1 second to determine whether or not to shoot you. So Phoenix, they're responding to a noise complaint. They go to this guy's house at like 2 a.m. Now, standard operating procedure is you don't stand in front of the door when you knock on it. You stand off to the side. So there's two officers, one on each side of the door. Pound on the door. Whether they announce themselves or not, I don't know. Obviously, they're always going to claim that they announce themselves. Phoenix Police Department. Okay. Guy opens the door. Sees that it's cops, and he's been playing video games. So he has this weird futuristic pistol in his hand. As soon as he sees it's the cops, he drops it, and one of the cops open fires and kill him. This happens a lot. And I mean it happens a lot. It happened a lot when I was in California 2 or 3 decades ago. It happened in Southern California. It happened in Oregon. It happened in Nevada. Cops get afraid. And when they're afraid, they're like any other animal, they're dangerous. So I'm going to tell you right now, if you're approached by an officer for any reason, make sure both your hands are empty and they're where they can see it. If you're in a car, put your hands on the steering wheel. No fast moves. If he says license and registration, you inform him, they're in my wallet, they're in the glove box, they're in the sun visor, they're in the whatever. You tell them, this is where they are. May I get them? No fast moves. Especially nowadays, cops, the ones that are staying cops, and they're not, I don't think you're going to have a lot of police left in the United States after a while. They're scared. They're very scared. So just remember what I said. Treat them like any other dangerous wild animal. Move slow. No fast moves. Now, I talked about this, a few shows ago, something called a COVID pass. This is a health wallet, and it's being pushed out all through India and South Africa right now. It's a digital health wallet, quote unquote. And it could be on your phone. It could be on a flash drive. It could be tattooed on your arm. And it's, you have to have this. Like in China, they have it on your phone, on their cell phone. And your cell phone will give you permission to enter a building. Okay? Well, let me give you an idea. And this came from a truck driver. COVID pass slowly making its way into companies. I don't work for Chevron. I just deliver products to this oil field site. But I was instructed by security to download an app, and I'll need to answer the two questions below, then proceed to scan the barcode for approval. And the questions are, you have shortness of breath, difficulty breathing, loss of appetite or smell, muscle pains, sore throat, just different questions. And then you answer it on your phone. And then when you go to the door, the security door, to access the space, you scan your phone there. It'll scan your phone, and it'll tell you whether or not you can enter it. This is coming in. It started in South Africa as a quote-unquote test, and now it's being spread out through many of the corporations in the United States. Now we're going to get into Trump. So Trump got fed up with the communists in the Congress who won't do anything because, well, they're communists. So he bypassed them, and he signed some executive orders. Quite interesting. What they're going to do is, it's an order to defer payroll taxes and replace the $600 unemployment benefit with a $400 benefit. Because a lot of you people out there are making a hell of a lot more money on unemployment than you ever made in real life. So he's... Now, we'll see what happens, because you know what communists do. They have all these lawyers, and they're going to start suing the White House, suing him. We'll see how long it takes before he can actually cut this stuff loose. So, all right, we all know Joe Biden's running for president, right? Well, I found this website. It is joebiden.info. Touchy Uncle Joe. Joe Biden is back to take a hands-on approach to America's problems. And here's all of these videos when he's touching and rubbing himself on these other, on these women, and it's just, it's astounding. Now, it's a parody. It's a parody site, right? So it's funny and it's informative. JoeBiden.info. And by the way, there's Kamala Harris. .info as well. And I'm not even going to justify her presence with talking about it, but her website, and it's a parody. Here's how it's a parody. It tells the truth. It's where she's going to jail parents because her children are skipping school. Okay? And she didn't like using DNA testing because too many people would get set free. There's a lot to it, but you can go to Uncle Joe, and you can go to Kamala Harris, and you can read all about him and listen to him, and it sometimes it's worth listening to. Kamala Harris is, you know, everybody has a Wikipedia page. I probably have one too. I've never looked, but Kamala Harris, her Wikipedia page has been scrubbed, not deleted, for the past month, because I knew she was going to be the pick. She's the perfect. She's half Indian half Jamaican. She's not black. Her family, as a matter of fact, were the first slaveholders in Jamaica. So she's kind of a weird type of creature. But she's a full-blown elite communist. And all the things that she's done that are evil and disgusting. Now, what's happening is that the communists are going to try and push her in the middle, in your mind. They're pushing right now for people to believe that she's a moderate Democrat, that she's a conservative Democrat. Okay? They're pushing it hard. Her Wikipedia page has been scrubbed from everything she's done that was evil and bad. Now, this is just a teaser I'm going to have for you to play. I'm going to play this. This is just a little bit, right? This is just, I have 15 minutes, if you want, or is it 45? I think it's 45 minutes. It's 46 minutes of Biden and his nonsense blathering. This is where he takes both his feet, shoves them in his mouth, and tries to talk. I'm not going to play the 46 minutes. I'm going to post it on my website that if you're bored one night and you want to hear all of them, you can go there. But I'll just have a little teaser here for those of you who don't know who Joe Biden is.
Play the radio. Make sure the television, excuse me, make sure you have the record player on at night. The phone. Make sure the kids hear words. We got to, it's just, yeah. But you got to, I mean, we got to reassure, look, my.
And no, that really wasn't edited. That's Joe Biden talking most of the time. This whole election that's coming up is a joke. It is a flat-out push by the communists in the United States to grab power. That's all it is. Nobody in their right mind thinks Joe Biden is going to make a president. If he doesn't die from a cardiac arrest before the election, he's going to fade out into nothingness in a very short time. And then Kamala Harris will end up being vice president. Unfortunately, she can't be because she's not natural born. Neither of her parents are U.S. citizens. Well, they are now. One of them is, anyway, as far as I know. This is the same thing as when we had the abomination. They push because it would be a show of white privilege if they didn't get elected. This is just the excuses that they use all the time. Okay, now, the rest of the show is going to be a memorial to my mother. And it is as I recorded it. It's a little history. My mother died some years back. And she was not a normal woman. She rode with the Hells Angels in Humboldt County. And I watched her cut a man's finger off once when he tried to grab the window of the car. But she raised, without a husband, three children, a couple dogs, and paid for the house. So what you're going to hear is my recording when I got back from California, where my mother passed. So you'll hear a different date. You'll hear all kinds of stuff there. And you'll hear, it's hard for me to do this show. It's really hard. Because we cared for my mother. She cared for us. Even though she was different. I mean, she was different. Yeah. So this will be the last I'm talking on this show, and we'll cut over to the recording in a minute. But I appreciate everybody listening, and if you need anything, you go to SE1.us, Samuel Edwards, the numeral 1.us, SE1.us. You can call us at 310-295-9686. We have the oregano oil in stock now. I don't know how long it's going to be in stock, and we have no idea when they can replenish it again. We have a bunch of products back in stock. You need to go to the health department at SE1 and take a look and see, scroll down, see what we have. Come into the store. We're on Government Way in Hayden for now. I don't know how long we're going to be here, but we're here for now, and we're open. We're closed, though, on Sunday and Monday. And Friday, I go to yard sales in the morning when it's good and when it's, you know, nice day and all. And so we don't open Friday until noon. So anyway, y'all keep your nose in the air and your ear to the ground and pay attention. And when you see stupid, tell them it's stupid. And when you see something dangerous, stand up for yourself. I'll see you next time.
It is August the 4th, 2013, and I am Kurt Wilson, the owner of Survival Enterprises, and I am the armchair survivalist. I wanted to let you know what was going on. In July, after the first show, which is on internet security, I know, what a laugh, a day or two later, something told me to call the engineer, Todd, and say, cancel the show for the rest of the month. Now, any of you who've listened to my show, you know I don't do that. Something said, you need to have the rest of the month open. So I told Todd to play The Way to Happiness, parts 1, 2, and 3. It's not as if we all can't learn from that. So he set it up. 2 days after that, I get a phone call from my brother in California. I know he's an idiot. He's still living there. And he says, mom's had a stroke and she's in the hospital. So we packed up lock, stock, and barrel, and my wife, Angie, my son, Eric, and I headed south. When we got to where we were going, I went into the hospital in the ICU, and my mother had had a massive brainstem stroke, which basically shut off the ability of the brain to control the body. Period. Nothing. Couldn't control anything. The only thing keeping her alive was the oxygen. They had her hooked up to machinery. She was 80 years old, 81, not sure which. She was there. Brain scan showed that she was there. Brain was working fine. It had no control whatsoever on the body, and the body was dying. The machinery could not keep it going. My family is not just a family. We're not just some people. Our lineage is traced back to Philip de Renault. He was a Knight Templar over 1,000 years ago. We're descendants of the original Reynolds clan, with Clan McInturf, Clan MacDonald, Kitching, Bruner, and the Cherokee Nation thrown in. Our family history goes back well over 1,000 years and is trackable. We've had presidents, highwaymen, thieves, generals, soldiers, healers, shamans, princes, princesses. We've had books written about members of our family, both good and bad. Some of our family is still hated in certain parts of the world, and some still have warrants out for their arrest in certain parts of the world. Some have statues standing about them in certain parts of the world. The thing about our family is that we always craved the adventure. Many of you know most of your friends are just an 8-to-5. You know, they just go through life, do their 8-to-5 thing, have a wife, 2.1 children, couple cars, and they're happy with that. We've never been that way. We've always craved the adventure. So has my mother. My mother's always craved an adventure. And when she's not in an adventure, she gets weak and tired and crabby. I told you that we showed up in Modesto, California, and we went and saw my mother, and she had had a massive stroke. It had burned her brainstem. She was still there, and there's some of you out there, many of you, who don't understand when I use the term she. I know you've heard me speak of the body, the mind, the spirit. Our family is not like normal families. We don't believe you have a soul like a little puppy. We believe you are a soul. So when I say she was still there, I mean she was still there in her head. And she was angry and upset because this was not part of the plan. She didn't plan on having her body die on her. So my brother and my sister and I, after talking with all the rest of the clan, we said our goodbyes to mom. And she was upset that she would not be remembered. So there's no option. You cannot not remember my mother. So I promised her that I would take it upon myself to categorize, log, and scan and copy every photograph that we have available to us. And they go back to 1850, 40 something. I'm not sure. I haven't gone through the whole thing yet. But I've been astounded at some of the history that I've seen in these boxes of pictures and photographs that I brought home. So with my sister, my brother, and my wife, Angie, we held my mom and had them pull out the oxygen tube. It took her about 6 minutes for the body to die, and then she left at 7:51 p.m., July 18th. She was met by some people who loved her and would show her the way. But I want to talk a little bit about my mom. She wasn't just some old 80-year-old woman who just kicked the can. My brother apparently couldn't get away from her, so he spent most of his life living with her, or vice versa. She spent most of her life living with him and his wife and his daughter, Mary. And some years back, my brother became a representative for the NRA. Now, what he does is he works with the friends of the NRA, putting on dinners and auctions all throughout California and Nevada. Like me, he's not good at what he does. He's the best in the world at what he does. When I was a gunsmith, I wasn't good. I was the best in the world at what I did, and he is the best at what he does. And Nana, Wilma, everyone called her Nana. Nana worked with him at all of the dinners and all of the auctions, and everyone got to know her. And she could take control of an area that was confused and step in, and you did not want to argue with her. My mom was not a normal woman. I recall when we were kids, we didn't have welfare. Once a month, the government would hand out excess cheese and peanut butter, and, you know, our government used to care about the citizens. Well, that went away in the 60s and 70s, but we would drive to Oakland, California, is where they had the big warehouse there. So there's me, my sister, and my mom, and we would have to drive through some real seedy places in Oakland. And I remember one day some guy, we're doing, driving real slow across these railroad tracks, and one day some guy comes running up to the side of the car and grabs the door with his left hand, because your window's rolled down, and then he's trying to unlock it, open the door with the other. My mom calmly pulled a knife out of her boot and cut his finger off, just whacked it right off. And then she felt bad about it, so she threw the piece out at him. That was my mom. I came home from school one day. I think I was 6 years old, 8 years old. And here was my dad packing his car, and he said, "Nice knowing you." Gives me his service medals, and off he drives. So she had to raise three children on her own. Well, a year or so later, she hooks up with some other guy who abused her. And she didn't take that too well. And one day, he comes home drunk from a bar, opens the front door, and there she is standing with a loaded M1 carbine with a 30-round mag in it, pointing it at his face, telling him to get the hell out of here. And we had already put all his personal belongings on the front lawn. That was my mom. I'll tell you a little bit of history about my mom. You know what a sweater girl was? The pinup girls from the 40s and 50s used to wear these bras, like Lady Gaga, these bras that are like a cone that come out almost to a point. And then they would wear a beautiful cashmere sweater over that. That was a sweater girl. My mom did that in high school. I still don't have all the information. I am still finding out things. I didn't know. I'd only heard rumor that our clan came from a Knight Templar. I just found the proof this morning. So there's a lot of things that I don't know that I'm finding. She went to school at Humboldt High, and she was good friends with a guy there nicknamed Tiny, who started the Hells Angels of Humboldt County. She would go on rides with them now and then. And by the way, she stayed friends with him, unbeknownst to me, until the day he died and was buried at the Catholic cemetery behind our house in Sacramento, California. And that was in the middle 60s, I think it was, late 60s. At 18, Wilma married Jack and became Wilma Wilson. You know, Dad was in the Navy. And we were in Eureka at the time as a little kid. And then my sister was born, and we moved to base housing in San Diego. And an interesting thing happened to me in San Diego. This is like the 50s, and if you can imagine how everybody was dressed and what everybody did, nobody ever locked their doors, and everyone felt safe in base housing. And it wasn't base housing like you have. These were like single-level concrete buildings that would house four apartments or houses. One night, I was put to bed, and this is when I was shown my totem. Totem is your spirit animal that guides you. I was put to bed. They close the door. It's pitch black in my room. I hear something rustling in the corner. And I mean pitch black. I see nothing. I hear something rustling. And I'm seeing two golden eyes about 2.5 feet off the ground. And they start coming towards me in a walking manner. And I'm looking at this. Now I'm not asleep. I haven't even gone to sleep. I'm looking at it like, what the heck is that? I feel cold. I'm so afraid. And then if you can imagine, those of you who have a dog or a cat, imagine it getting up onto your bed. You feel the weight of a body pressing down on the blankets and laying across my legs. At that point, I screamed. And all the men, there was 20 men, must have been out front, come running in to my room. There was nothing there. But you could see where something had laid on the foot of my bed. And I told them what had happened. And most of them, like, just foo-fooed it, and like I was some wacko nut. Everyone left, and then Mom sat in there, and she goes, "What did you see?" I said, "I didn't see anything, but it had eyes like a tiger." She said, "You'll remember that." To this day, my totem is still the tiger. Now, we moved from there back to Eureka into a two-bedroom apartment, and we had like 8 people living in there. And I have some stories that I could tell you about my Uncle Irwin coming home from the Navy with sunburn and various parts of his body, and his new wife and him were in one of the rooms, and all I heard from him was, "Ow, ow, ow, ow," all night long. I never did understand that until years later. From there, we moved to a log cabin on a reservation, and that's when I was taught how to shoot a bow. But it wasn't a normal bow. It was a 6-foot long bow, and it had come from our family and been brought over from England. I don't remember a lot about that. See, I'm telling you all of this stuff from what I remember. And it was always a contentious time with Mom and Dad, because Dad wanted to be the man, and so did Mom. And she did not like anyone telling her what to do. She just wanted to do what she wanted to do whenever she wanted to do it, not answer to anyone. And Dad didn't like that. After a few years, it got kind of problematic with them. Well, Dad got out of the Navy. And by the way, when Dad was in the Navy, he met this guy named Bing Crosby. Apparently, Bing Crosby had been filming one of his Road 2 movies, like the Road to Rio, Road to Water Valley, and my dad assisted him in some manner to the point where it endeared my father to Bing for the rest of his life. Well, Dad heard, he got out of the Navy and heard that there was work in San Francisco. They were building something called Candlestick Park. So, lock, stock, and barrel off the reservation, we moved to a trailer in a trailer park right up the hill from Highway 101, which was a two-lane road. I remember walking across it to go to Candlestick Park to hang around with my dad while he worked building it. I was there when they built Candlestick Park. We lived there until almost everybody in the area got sick from some strange disease, which we didn't find out what it was till 30 years later when we found out it was our government testing the spread of pathogen and seeing how many people they can sicken in a metropolitan area. It was something they ended up calling the Hong Kong flu, claiming that it came from some illegal Hong Kong people, you know, somebody from Hong Kong. It wasn't. Well, after the stick got built, Mom said, look, we can make money doing foster care. So we moved into this three-story house in Sharps Park, and my mom started doing foster care. We'd have a dozen kids at one time. I remember that. And I remember a steel barrel that I would get into and go to the top of the hill in our backyard and roll down. And I remember that as a long roll. And you know something? I found a picture of that. I don't think my backyard was more than 20 feet long or wide. I just found that picture this morning. Good God, I was short. But that's what we did up there. And then all of a sudden we didn't. And then all of a sudden we were poor, had nothing. We didn't have beds. We slept on sleeping bags on the floor. And we moved to San Mateo. And I woke up one night with a rat asleep on my chest. And I was afraid to move. And at that moment, Dad came home. It was about 2 a.m. He saw the rat and he threw something. The rat took off and ran underneath the sink. He grabbed his 1911 45, caught the rat in a bucket, took it outside, dumped it in the garbage can, and squeezed off 8 rounds into a garbage can at 2 a.m. Police showed up a few minutes later and Dad goes, I shot a damn rat. And I go, oh, okay. And left. Try that today. Bad thing was, about 2 days later, my sister and I came down with the bubonic plague. See, that's what a disease was, a disease, not a political statement. They cordoned off the city block, wouldn't let anybody come and go, and my mother had to walk my sister and I down to the corner twice a day so we can get antibiotic shots. Well, obviously we lived. And then Dad got a job at United Airlines. So him and a couple dozen guys that had been his shipmates aboard ship when he was in the Korean War bought some property at the south end of Lawrence Station Expressway in an area now known as Sunnyvale. Before then, it was nothing more than a tomato farm. And for the exorbitant fee of $4,500, he bought the property and the materials to build a 3-bedroom, 1-bath house with an attached 1-car garage, which we lived in for about a dozen years. During that time, remember I told you about Bing Crosby, and I've talked to you about things that have how I met John Wayne at one of Bing Crosby's parties and how Bing's daughter taught me how to ride. Well, I found out it wasn't Bing Crosby's daughter that taught me how to ride. It seems Bing's first wife died on a Christmas. We were there at a Christmas party, and this really nice lady, I thought it was his daughter. I mean, you know, I'm a kid. She takes me out and teaches me how to ride the thoroughbreds. Her name was Olive Catherine Grandstaff. She was 30 years younger than Bing was. She ended up marrying him, and she was known as Catherine Crosby. Yeah, I had that cleared up by looking through this box of stuff. Anyway, so we lived there for a while, and then one day I come home from school, and there's my dad packing up his Volvo station wagon with a bunch of stuff, and he said, nice knowing you. I mean, literally, that's what he said, and gave me his war medals, and he drove off. Oh, they'd had fights. I remember one time Mom threw an iron at his head, and he ducked at the last minute, and it embedded itself in the wall of the house. These weren't nice fights. It was more like Mom was fighting, and Dad was totally befuddled of what the hell was going on. Mom literally was too strong to have a man. She was raised that way. She had to stand on her own and defend and protect that which she loved her whole life by herself. So after Dad left, she got three jobs, just so she could pay the house and feed three kids and two dogs, a parakeet, and a couple goldfish. So she had to have three jobs. And what she did was, first job was like 6 a.m. I think it was 6 to 9, and she did janitorial someplace. And then she went to work for Lenkirk Electric, which was a part of the military industrial complex in the Bay Area. They built circuit boards for missiles. And this is in the early 60s. Now, my mom smoked. In fact, my mom smoked since I was in her belly when she was pregnant with me. You're going to love this. When I was a kid, Mom would give me 50 cents to walk down the street to the supermarket, buy a loaf of bread, quart of milk, and a pack of cigarettes. And I'd walk in there and they'd go, oh, you're Wilma's kid. Yep, this is what she wants. And they'd give me a pack of cigarettes, carton of milk, loaf of bread, and I'd walk home with it. That was then. This is now. You couldn't smoke at Lenkert's because they had to have a clean room. I mean, they didn't care about the smoke. They just didn't want you dropping ash into the circuitry. I have this Aunt Thelma, or I did. She was very famous. She rode in the stagecoach, very last stagecoach that was ever robbed. Okay, this is Aunt Thelma. She could drink me under the table. Anyway, Aunt Thelma taught my mom the secret to never dropping ash from a cigarette. Here's the secret. Try it sometime. Mom would take a very thin wire and put it down the center of the cigarette into the filter. That's it. Your ash will never fall. Try it sometime. So Mom would have this cigarette dangling from her lips, and you swear to God, any second that ash is going to fall, and you're just like, you're holding an ashtray, just reaching over like, any second, and it was the strangest thing to watch her. But they said, well, if it works, it works. So she started making money selling wire to all the other girls on the assembly line. She spent an hour every night clipping wire to link the cigarettes. Then at night, she worked as a waitress at the bowling alley. I won't say my mom was a fox, but she had a good figure. She wasn't like, oh, always had dates and stuff, because she didn't take crap from anyone, so obviously the men didn't want any part of her. Well, it ended up being so much work for her that she had to hire a nanny. She hired a Scottish nanny. And I didn't know this till years later, that she was part of our clan. But she hired this woman, and not only did this woman take care of us kids, but she also was a piano instructor. Now, my grandpa was a sheriff of Placerville for a few years, and the whorehouse on the end of town, they're supposed to pay their taxes every year, and if they don't pay their taxes, they got to do something. And Grandpa wasn't the kind that would just throw them out in the cold, so to speak, so he would take trades. Not sex. One year, he traded for a piano. It had been made in 1897. It was an upright. That's what we had in our front room when I was a kid, this 1897 New Yorker upright piano. And that's what I learned how to play piano on. So this lady taught us, not only did she take care of us as a nanny would, but she also taught us how to play the piano, all three of us kids. My brother was the youngest. He came around last. After he was born, Dad didn't last another year and he took off. It wasn't anything my brother did. My brother wasn't problematic. In fact, he was easy to take care of. All we did was tie him in his bed when my sister and I wanted to go somewhere. No, that's not a joke. I don't remember that. He says that he swears we did it. We were so poor that my mom wasn't making $10 an hour. She was making 65 cents, 85 cents an hour. And she had to pay the loan off on the house. And she had to pay for our health, our doctors, our dentists. She had to buy a car. Grandpa loaned her $150 to buy a 1951 Ford four-door coupe, which then she had to have the lady next door help her put seat covers on the car. My mom had never done this. She'd never put seat covers on anything, but the seats were torn to hell. That's why she got this car so cheap. See, the car only had 20,000 miles on it. It purred like a kitten, but somebody had gotten in and torn up the seats. That's why she bought it. She got it so cheap. Had new tires on it. I mean, it was beautiful, except for the seats. So my mom figured out how to take off and unbolt the seats, and there were bench seats, front and rear, how to unbolt them, how to take them out. She went to Sears. Sears was the go-to store, and they had seat covers. There were factory seat covers. They weren't this cheap crap you get for $19.95 at Walmart. I mean, you put them on with hog rings. My mom went and got that and took her 2 days, and she had new seat covers on the car, and they were just beautiful. And I remember my sister and I used to play in the trunk of that car. And I think I told you the story of what my mom had shoved way up in the back of that trunk. It was a duffel bag, guns and ammo and food and clothes, and that was her bug-out bag. My mom was a little different. That's why I'm different. And if I wanted anything, my mom didn't have the money to give me a quarter, even a quarter. She had no money for that. She barely had all her funds allocated to us surviving. The one thing she would do is every Friday night, she would buy a pizza that you cook at home, a pint of cottage cheese. I have no clue how the hell she figured out those two together. And they used to have a pack of comic books for 50 cents. She would go those three things, and that would be our Friday night. I think the whole expense was like $2 for everything. I decided to help out. Once in a while, some friends of my mom's, we would go to the beach, Santa Cruz. And I started collecting seashells, little tiny ones, not big scallops or anything like that. I mean, little tiny, tiny ones, size of an eraser. I had thousands of them, so I'd take them home. And my uncle flattened the tip of a little tiny nail, a finishing nail, and I'd use that as a drill. And I would drill holes in these seashells. And my grandmother had thousands and thousands of the hoop earrings, the pierced ear things. She would give me them, and I would make earrings. And I went door to door selling pairs of earrings for 25 cents. That helped. I mean, if I wanted, once a year, Mom would take us to Sears and use Grandpa's credit card and buy our school clothes. That's where, when Levi's were made in America, and the 501s cost $5 a piece. And that's, I'd get three pair of those every year. And then the next year, my brother would get those, and I'd get new ones. And then after a while, my sister, we were taught how to sew, by the way, by my mother. We couldn't afford a lot of clothes. So my mother taught me how to sew on a treadle sewing machine, taught my sister how to sew. And once a year, she'd take all of the old Levi's, take the hems out, and make a dress for my sister. So we would repurpose clothing. We didn't throw anything away. I mean, literally, when the garbage man come to pick the garbage up every, what was it, Wednesday or Saturday morning, it would be like two bags in a small garbage can out on a curb. And he's like, what do you do with all your garbage? My mom would tell him, we don't have garbage. All the food leftovers. First off, we don't have food leftovers. I mean, period. We didn't have food leftovers. There was nothing to throw out. Everything we used, we either recycled or we didn't have garbage. You could tell a real poor person by how much garbage they throw out. So after a while, Mom got tired of it. My aunt lived in Sacramento and said, Wilma, why don't you move up here? We get a house for you, only cost you $100 a month. We can get you a job and all of this good stuff. So my mom sold the house for $12,500. And I could tell you something. That house was at 1221 Oak Creek Way. The last time it sold was $500,000. Can you believe that? From 4,500 to 12,500, and I've gone back four or five times to that house, and each time it's, you know, the owner said, yeah, I sold it for $120,000, or I bought it for $250,000. It sold for over $500,000. So I moved to Sacramento. I forgot where Mom got a job at, but she got a job, and it was better than what we had before. See, it used to be in our front room, we had a couch and an old Hoffman television that cost my mom $10. I mean, that was it. Well, I remember when we moved here or to Sacramento, we ended up getting an easy chair. Oh, my Lord. We're uptown now. And we got an actual chrome-plated vinyl dinette set. You've seen them. They're all from the 50s and 60s and 70s. And we each had our own bed. Holy cow. Can you believe that? My brother had his bed. I had my bed. My sister had her bed. Didn't have a garage. We had a carport. But that was Sacramento. And we did pretty good there. There's a lot of stories that I could tell. But my mom, Wilma Mary Wilson, was not a normal woman. She was raised by a mountain man and survivors of the Depression. She was taught that, no, I'm sorry, honey, there is no option. You can't stumble and fall. You have to stand on your own 2 feet. And you have to be confident about it. And that's gone nowadays. It's gone. Nowadays, people put their hand out. Now, granted, my mom put her hand out, too. There were times when her life went really bad physically. And she had to go on disability and food stamps. And if my brother hadn't been there, my brother stayed with her to make sure that everything went as well as possible. Now, don't get me wrong. We still had fun. Hell, we counted ourselves lucky. We really did. But she learned that you can't suck the government's tit and expect to have any kind of soul left. So she went back to school. She went back to college. And in 1984, at the age of 52, she graduated with a 4-year degree in early childhood development. And she started the Head Start in California. Now, after a few years, she got fed up with it and realized it was pure crap in politics. I mean, the kids would come there from illegal immigrants. And they would bathe them and cut their hair and take the lice off of them and feed them during the week. On the weekend, they'd go home. Then they'd come back the next week, and they'd be just as bad. And it was a government game. So she got tired of it. But here she is. She raised 3 kids, and she goes back to college. Now, I was gone most of the time. She raised me very strict. My brother, not so strict. In fact, when I come home from one deployment overseas, I'm sitting at the dinner table and we're talking and Mom says something and my brother mouthed off to her. I backhanded him so hard if there wasn't a wall behind him, he would have flown a 10 feet. Instead, I just knocked him ass over tea kettle. And I told him, don't you ever talk to our mother like that again. I do not allow it. I don't talk with disrespect to my elders ever. That's gone. Mom had a wake. She said she didn't want to waste time getting buried. She wanted to be cremated. So we had a wake. We only had 2 days. Sent the email out. It was on Sunday. I don't remember. Bob's Home of Beef or something like that. That's my mom's favorite place. Whenever you showed up there on your birthday, they give you a hat, a cowboy hat. And she told my brother last year, you make damn sure they have a pink hat for me this year. I'm tired of those blue ones. They had a pink hat this year. So we showed up there, and I had like 7 bottles of wine. My brother, who doesn't drink, had 6. We had a good time. I want to read you something that was read at my grandfather's funeral, his father's funeral, and his grandfather's funeral, and every funeral in the clan as far back as we know. I'm going to try and read it to you, okay? Now, first off, if I get cut off, Mom had 2 songs she wanted played at the wake. Those 2 songs are my outgoing music. This is my mother's choice, all right? Here is an old, old Celtic prayer. Do not stand at my grave and weep. I'm not there. I do not sleep. I'm 1,000 winds that blow. I am the diamond glints on the snow. I'm the sunlight that ripened grain. I am the gentle autumn's rain. When you awaken in the morning's hush, I am the swift, uplifting rush of quiet birds in circled flight. I'm the soft star that shines at night. Do not stand at my grave and cry. I am not there. I did not die. That's been traced back 1,200 years that we know of. And here's another prayer, if I can get to it. Wilma, Mary Wilson, we remember you. At the rising of the sun and at its going down, we remember you. At the blowing of the wind and the chill of winter, we remember you. At the opening of the buds and in the rebirth of spring, we remember you. At the blueness of the skies and in the warmth of summer, we remember you. At the beginning of the year and when it ends, we remember you. When we are weary and in need of strength, we remember you. When we are lost and sick at heart, we remember you. When we have joy we crave to share, we remember you. When we have decisions that are difficult to make, we remember you. When we have achievements that are based on yours, we remember you. As long as we live, you too will live, for you are now a part of us as we remember you. Goodbye, Mom. I'll see you next time.
The far side of the sky, the first thing that I'm gonna do is spread my wings and fly. I'm gonna land beside a lion, run my fingers through his mane, or I might find out what it's like to ride a drop of rain. Yeah, when I get where I'm going, there'll be only happy tears. I will share the sins and struggles I have carried all these years. Now I need my heart wide open. I will love and have no fear. Yeah, when drop me down here. I'm gonna walk with my granddaddy, and he'll match me step for step. And I'll tell him how I've missed him every minute since he left. And then I'll hug his neck. Yeah, when I get where I'm going, I will share the sins and struggles I have carried all these years. And I'll leave my heart wide open. I will love and have no fear. Yeah, when I get where I'm going, don't have me down. Get where I'm going, and I see my Maker's face, I'll stand forever in the light of His amazing grace.
Come on in. Rock a while.
Grandma got run over by a reindeer walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe. She'd been drinking too much eggnog, and we begged her not to go. But she forgot her medication, and she staggered through the door out in the snow. When we found her Christmas morning at the scene of the attack, she had hoof prints on her forehead and incriminating claws marks on her back. Grandma got run over by a reindeer walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe. Now we're all so proud of Grandpa, he's been taking this so well. See him in there watching football, drinking beer and playing cards with Cousin Mel. It's not Christmas without Grandma. All the family dressed in black, and we just can't help but wonder, should we open up her gifts or send them back? Grandma got run over by a reindeer walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe. Now the goose is on the table, and the pudding made of fig, and the blue and silver candles that would just have matched the hair in Grandma's wig. I warned all my friends and neighbors, better watch out for yourselves. They should never give a license a man who drives a sleigh and plays with elves. Grandma got run over by a reindeer walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe.
Sing it with us, Grandpa.
Grandma got run over by a reindeer walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me